This is probably going to be one of the most exciting things I ever do.
The Stage Podcast, a fresh look at entertainment.
I can be a little bit grumpy or even rude, but I don't want that to be, you know, my entire persona.
Because I think Cameron wanted someone that would surprise everyone and come from a different world.
These are very interesting questions, I have to say. You know, these are not the usual last questions that I get asked.
There's still a little bit of snobbery, I think, attached to that, and I'm always going to be Karen McDonald.
To hear interviews with some of the biggest names in theatre and television, just search for Stage Podcast in iTunes or in Google.
May I congratulate you on not having just got your question straight off of Wikipedia.
Hello everybody, it's 2010! Yes, sounding all cockney there, but hello, I'm Ewan Spence, and welcome to the first preview show for this year's Edinburgh Festival Fringe podcast from myself, The Stage, and the Podcast Network. Yeah, we are about a month away from the start of the Fringe. Officially, it's running this year from August the 6th through to August the 30th. Obviously, there's a couple of preview shows. Everybody beds in the material in Edinburgh from about the 4th and 5th as well. But we're going to be here for you from now, from the start of July. The next 4 weeks, we're going to look back at some of the interviews and excitements and hijinks that the podcast has had in previous years. Just get you back into the mood of that lovely time of year when all of the world of arts and culture and reviews and everything just lands up on my doorstep here at Edinburgh. If you have a show that's going on in Edinburgh and you'd like to be here on the podcast, we're running daily. We've got 3 interviews every day. We've got news, we've got reviews, all of that coming on. Please do get in touch. Email address is ewanspence@gmail.com. Also on Twitter, it's just Ewan, E-W-A-N is the Twitter name. And you'll find me on Facebook as well if you're so inclined to do that. But if you are going to send me an event invitation, send me an email as well, because I get so many of them, I will probably lose it in the mix. Right then, one theatre troupe back in 2008, how time flies, that got in touch, said, would you like to come along and review our show? Was that of Barry Wheatley himself and the cast of Kerouac and All That Jazz, were at Sweet ECA 2 years ago, profiling the life of Jack Kerouac. And hello, we'd go back, have a little listen to that one, and just remind us, someone who's on the road, someone who made it up as they went along, coming to the Fringe and just putting on a stellar life story in a wonderful theatre cast, and, you know, in a small room, a small acting troupe, coming up and doing what I think typifies the Edinburgh Fringe, which is bringing theatre and culture and just getting on with it and doing it. I love that. This, Barry Wheatley and the cast of Kerouac and All That Jazz. With 247 venues around the Edinburgh Fringe, the choice of the Sweet ECA as a venue for Kerouac and All That Jazz may seem rather serendipitous, given it's the Edinburgh College of Arts, but no matter what it is, it's a cracking show. And joining me there, cast and crew from that, we have writer and director Barry Wheatley.
Hi.
Chris Ngruka.
Hello.
Who's playing Jack.
Yes.
The eponymous role. And also playing Jack. We'll come to that in a second. Andy Feedham.
Hi.
And best friend Chris Holm.
Hello there.
Hello. So, Barry, let's start with you. Kerouac and All That Jazz. Just tell us a little bit about the show.
It tells the life story of Jack Kerouac through the mouth and eyes, if you like, of the group that were around him at the time. People like Neil Cassady and Carolyn Cassady, and Luann Henderson and Allen Ginsberg, and even his mother, Mamère. They're all members of all characters on stage at any particular time in the show, and they tell his life story. And of course, it's a sort of a flashback scenario where we've got the old Jack on stage right from the very beginning of the show, and we end up with him being left alone on stage at the end of the show, and these various characters interact with him and perform various scenes which tell us about the story of his life, you know, and his search for happiness, because that's what Jack Kerouac was all about, really. It was called King of the Beats, but he hated that title. he actually hated it. He didn't very much like the people around him who were members of the Beat Generation either. He was a very spiritual man, and he was looking throughout his life for answers to questions which we can't really answer, but he thought he might find some answers, but he never did.
But he does hold a great place in the American heart in terms of obviously Novel on the Road, and his continuing works throughout Novel. He's very much a cornerstone and one of those linchpins of the era of the movement that led into the 60s and 70s.
That's right, but they got hold of him and used him in that sense, you know, and of course he became the icon of that period and of that kind of genre of writing, and particularly his poetry. But yeah, I still say that he wasn't a true beat in that sense, but he became known as the king of the beats, yeah. And people like Morrissey and even the Beatles, who changed their name, by the way, from they were originally Beatles, and they changed it to Beatles because of his influence. Yeah.
So we're going to hear a little part of the play here. Do you just want to set the scene up there for us here, Barry?
Yeah, it's a scene between the young Jack Kerouac and Neil Cassady, and they're talking about how to write.
Hey, I hear Alan's in Denver.
Yeah, he's been here a couple of months or so.
He's still teaching you poetry?
Well, I see him now and then. We talk a lot. Say, tell me about your book.
It was rejected 3 times, and then this guy, Giroux, loved it. But he cut it because he said it was too long. I mean, I said to him, Jesus, you didn't cut that out. But he did. Seems everybody knows best. I don't know if I like it now, you know. It's too well made. So anyway, everybody's treating me like Thomas fucking Wolfe, but I'm still Jack Kerouac with a sweaty jock.
Oh, don't let the bastards grind you down. What the fuck do they know?
Yeah, but these are the guys that make the rules, you know?
Rules? What fucking rules? You write how you feel. Say, did I tell you that Alan had this mystical experience?
What?
Yeah, he was reading a book by William Blake. You dig the guy?
Sure.
A dead poet, right? Well, Alan swears that he heard the actual voice of the guy reciting the words. How weird is that? And then everything both inside and outside of Alan's apartment was filled with this most amazing light. Alan said it was like the top of his fucking head coming off and the rest of the universe was connected to his fucking brain. Where's the rules in that, huh?
I guess there aren't any when it comes down to that sort of thing.
Right. No rules. So don't let no motherfucking agent tell you how to write. You don't need no self-conscious prissy style. You don't need no lordy fucking clauses. You don't need to sit there for hours thinking about where to put an itsy-bitsy comma or a period. What the fuck does a comma communicate? Is that where you should take a pause? So take a piss.
Yeah, you're right. Writing should be like jazz.
Yes.
Like when Charlie Parker goes off on one of his amazing improvisations and you don't know what's going to come out of that shiny horn next, except you know that what will come out will be the truth.
Exactly, exactly, the truth. The truth that you dig inside yourself or inside another human being who is like yourself. Now, that's what you want to write about.
You know, something happened to me like what happened to Alan. It was a while ago now, a night in August. My mare was in the kitchen talking to somebody and I sat out on the back stoop looking up at the sky. I stared at the stars for so long, they seemed to be staring right back at me. And I thought, you know, it doesn't matter anyway what I did. Nothing matters between our breathing and the sigh of the stars.
We're all angels, man. You, me, and the rest of this sorry bunch.
Angels?
Yeah.
Yeah, angels!
But that's what you want to write about.
Yeah.
You and me and what's happening among the rest of the angels out there in America.
Yeah, the angels, the bush, the tired, the beat. That's what I want to write about. The angels that look up at the stars.
Bushed.
Beat.
Punks.
Fellaheen.
Bums. Hustlers.
Seers. Saints.
Hookers. Drag queens. Junkies.
Writers. Poets. Angels.
Angel-headed hipsters.
Buddhas.
The beats.
The beat generation.
There we go there. Round of applause. From just me, really, you know. Right? Speaking to Andy and Chris, who both play Jack Kerouac, now, normally, you know, as actors, you have to go into the role and investigate the role. Did you two work together, given that you're playing the same character at different points in his life, or have you treated it as two separate roles in the play completely?
I think, in some respects, we've worked together because we looked at some video footage, film footage of Kerouac, and in some respects we've also treated it differently because we're at very different points in his life. One of the things is that Andy and I work together in our day jobs, proper jobs, and so we sort of know each other and we've performed together, and so on stage there's a lot of symbiotic relationships going on in terms of movement and reactions and things. So I hope that answers that question, but yes.
In the moments in the show when the two characters sort of mysteriously interact, we can feed very, very well off each other's body language and eye contact and things. For me as an actor, it's the joy of the reciting the Kerouac speeches and the poetry. I love the way he writes.
it's just one continuous flow after another, and it's how people talk as well. People don't talk and sometimes put commas and sentences and punctuations all together like traditionally we're supposed to, and I like that idea that you can actually spiel off lots and lots of dialogue in a single breath.
And turn now to Chris, who's been Neil Cassidy, one of Jack's earliest friends and one of the sort of catalysts to start him on his movement. With the amount of source material that was available, did you turn to that, or did you just stick with what was in the script?
Well, initially I just stuck what was in the script, because I'd never heard of Jack Kerouac, and I've only seen from coming to the festival just how popular he is by the audiences that we've had. I've read On the Road Now, and I think it's a really interesting story. There's some lovely words in there, and that comes out in the play. There's lots of sequences from his novel, or all of his novels actually, and I think it's really interesting.
And Barry, cheeky question here, how did you write this? Did you write this on one big roll of paper without stopping?
I wish in 3 weeks. It took me about 6 months, quite a lot of research, because I grabbed hold of On the Road Again after reading it as a young man, way, way back. And I thought, yeah, well, I liked that, and I read a bit of it. But then I picked up another of his books called The Dharma Bums, which was completely different, if you like, from On the Road. It was much more mature Kerouac and a much more spiritual Kerouac coming through Dharma Bums. And that really decided me on writing this play about Jack Kerouac. I did a lot more research then and found that I read all of the biographies about him and as much research as I could off the internet. And I put the whole thing together from that, really, yeah.
I mean, it's not a play that has a traditional happy ending to it.
No. I mean, why should a play have a happy ending anyway, you know? lots of good plays don't have happy endings, but Jack didn't have a happy ending either, because he died quite young, really. He was 47, I can't forget now, something like that. And he went home to live with his mum and just drank. And that's quite a sad ending for someone who had such an exciting and interesting life. And produce such an exciting and interesting work as well.
What do you think he would make of The Fringe now?
I don't think he'd like it. I think he'd hate it with Jack Kerouac, quite honestly. There are lots of one or two pretentious people around The Fringe. And I don't think Jack got on with that kind of person very well.
And where, as actors now, do you come up? It's obviously when somebody like yourself, Barry, has written the piece and is the director, you know, there's a fair idea that you've got this, you've got the show, you've taken it up, it might get noticed. Is that the same for you for you as actors, you three, coming up from a small company up to Edinburgh, putting on a play in a rather small venue that's not got the mega bucks of promotion or everything behind it? What do you hope to find, I hate to say this, but on the road to Edinburgh?
I think that... ideally, what we really want the production to find is its audience, and not just for those Kerouac fans, people who are familiar with his work, but it works as a very good introduction. A former student had come up and seen it and hadn't read Kerouac and came out saying, I've got to read his work. And it's hoping to find some of the new audience and keep his work alive and continuing on, because again it is universal in this idea of a journey, a search for meaning, and again the audience response is something that's been favorable, and we're hoping for that, and that people can appreciate not just the production, the performances, but Kerouac's work.
I think as well that this piece, more than any that I've performed in at the festival, suits a sort of fringe venue where the audience can become more involved in the action, and we sort of get a good feedback from them with the amounts of audiences that we've had. We know it's a small venue, but that just makes our performance all the more sort of stronger, if you like.
I'm hoping that audiences might come away and think, I'm going to have a crack at writing and see how far I get, and think, well, I'm going to try this crazy prissy style and just write my thoughts and feelings and translate it straight from my head onto paper. Maybe not a continuous ream of paper if they can't get their hands on one, but just sort of inspire them that they can write about their life. It doesn't have to be just in a diary format. Put their thoughts and feelings down on paper, and they never know, they might get written about in the future too.
That sounds like something you've already done yourself, Andy.
No, but I've been thinking about it.
Okay, now the show itself is only on until the 23rd, which is the last Saturday, and it's at...
It's at Suite ECA, which is the Edinburgh College of Art, venue 186.
And that's running at 7:45 every night?
7:45 every night, yeah.
Okay, and it's an hour and a half.
1 hour 20 minutes.
1 hour 20. So if you're trying to fit this in between all your comedy gigs and everything, well, shit, good for you for fitting it in between the comedy gigs, but, you know, get a challenging theatre as well. Remember, it runs slightly longer than a stand-up trying to fill a the regulation 1 hour that would fill up the BBC's time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Chris, Andy and Barry, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
And good luck for the last week in the run.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Barry Wheatley and the cast of Kerouac and all that jazz. Obviously, the times are for the show in 2008, not this year. If you go along this year, you'll probably see a completely different show, which is probably a good way of discovering the Edinburgh Festival. But anyway, as I said, if you're in a show, want to get involved with the podcast, I'm easy to get in touch with, ewanspence@gmail.com or Ewan on Twitter. I shall be back here next week with another preview. The fun will start along with the Fringe in the beginning of August, but until now, charge your batteries. It's going to be a brilliant year. See you next week.